I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Is Democracy Now!
I believe there should be consequence. We have laws that have to be followed and enforced that address and deal with people who cross our border illegally, and there should be consequence. And let's be clear, in this race, I'm the only person who has prosecuted transnational criminal organizations who traffic in guns, drugs, and human beings.
Vice President Kamala Harris on CNN in her first major television interview since becoming the Democratic presidential nominee. She was questioned about the economy, immigration, climate change, and U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza.
Let's get the hostages out. Let's get the ceasefire done.
But no change in policy in terms of arms and so forth.
No, we have to get a deal done.
We'll host a roundtable. Then journalist David Sirota investigates how extremists and tycoons orchestrated a system of legalized corruption in the United States in the Lever's new podcast series, Master Plan.
How did our democracy get replaced by a kleptocracy? Money. After more than a year of investigation, the Lever's team of journalists has now found the answer. The takeover of our government was no accident. It was all part of a grand scheme.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The World Health Organization says Israel's agreed to a three-day partial pause in attacks on Gaza starting Sunday in order to allow aid workers to distribute polio vaccines after Israel's brutal assault led to Gaza's first outbreak of the paralytic disease in 25 years. The WHO said the vaccination drive aims to reach 640,000 children under the age of 10.
So we start the 1st of September, and we start in central Gaza for 3 days, followed by south Gaza, and then followed by the north of Gaza. Due to the insecurity, the damage, the road infrastructure, and population displacement, but also based on our experience with this kind of campaigns globally and worldwide, the 3 days might not be enough to achieve adequate vaccination.
On Thursday, an Israeli airstrike on a residential building killed 8 people in Nuseirat in central Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, Israel's military said it's withdrawing its forces from Khan Yunis after a 3-week offensive has left much of the city in ruins. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli soldiers backed by armored bulldozers are continuing a wide-scale assault on Jenin for a third straight day. 3 people were killed in an Israeli airstrike on a car which reportedly killed Wassam Hazem, the head of Hamas in Jenin. Israeli forces withdrew late Thursday from Tulkarm and Tubas following a 2-day raid that saw several Palestinians killed in the widespread destruction of roads and civilian infrastructure, including water and electricity. Tulkarm residents assessed the damage after returning home.
Here where you were filming was the house of an old woman. Since the first moment of the raid, they destroyed the house, and they entered the house behind us. There were walls and a road here. They destroyed them. My relative's house, Yusuf Shahada's house, was also destroyed using missiles and drones.
Vice President Kamala Harris has given her first major sit-down interview since replacing President Biden on the Democratic ticket. On Thursday, Harris appeared on CNN alongside her running mate, Governor Tim Walz. The pair vowed to support the U.S. middle class, including through the child tax credit, lowering grocery costs and addressing the housing crisis. Harris also said she would not ban fracking, a reversal from her earlier position, that she would continue to crack down on the border, and that she might appoint a Republican to her cabinet. cabinet on Gaza, Harris vowed to continue the U.S. policy of support for Israel. We'll have more on the Harris-Walz interview after headlines. J.D. Vance has ramped up his attacks on Kamala Harris, saying at a rally in Erie, Pennsylvania, Wednesday, she can go to hell. Vance criticized the Biden administration for failing to fire anyone over the death of 13 U.S. troops who died during the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan 3 years ago.
Kamala Harris is so asleep at the wheel that she won't even do an investigation into what happened, and she wants to yell at Donald Trump because he showed up. She can go to hell.
This comes as newly resurfaced comments show J.D. Vance claiming childless teachers brainwash and destroy the minds of children. He converted to Catholicism in 2019. He didn't address whether nuns or priests should teach children. Meanwhile, the Arlington National Cemetery filed a report after two Trump campaign aides verbally attacked and pushed an Arlington Cemetery employee during a visit by Trump Monday. The staffer was attempting to prevent Trump's team from taking photos and videos, which is prohibited on cemetery grounds, as is political campaigning. South Korea's constitutional court ruled Thursday the country's climate law violates the rights of future generations in a major victory for the youth climate movement. The landmark decision finds the absence of legally binding greenhouse gas reduction targets as counter to the South Korean constitution and shifts too large of a burden on the country's future generations. Climate activists in Seoul celebrated the decision.
Our focus will shift to legislative and administrative capacity next. I plan to find ways to drive change through these areas. In the near future, I'm planning a campaign targeting the National Assembly.
In Bangladesh, ongoing heavy flooding has killed at least 52 people and displaced nearly 500,000 people. Authorities say more than 1 million families have been cut off by the floodwaters, many of them without food or clean water. In Yemen, at least 33 people are dead and dozens more missing after flooding from monsoon rains triggered mudslides that swept through a district controlled by the Houthi movement. At least one clinic in Yemen is reporting cases of cholera, with concerns that continuing rains could help the waterborne disease spread. There are also reports of more than 1,000 cholera cases in Sudan, where the UN says over 300,000 people have been impacted by recent flooding, worsening an already dire humanitarian crisis. Residents of the city of Tokar in Sudan's Red Sea state have been leaving on foot after the Arbat Dam collapsed, washing away bridges and roads.
People have no food. They sit on high places and they have nothing, no food or water. There are people who died and have not been buried yet. There are people who are missing. There are collapsed houses and others were swept away by the flood.
Authorities across Brazil have implemented emergency measures after a thick blanket of smoke settled over major cities, including Sao Paulo and the capital, Brasilia, closing schools, grounding flights and triggering air quality alerts. The Amazon and the Pantanal wetlands, the world's largest tropical wetland, have reported a record-breaking wildfire season amidst Brazil's severe drought and extreme heat. In related news, newly published data shows Canada's devastating wildfires last year produced more carbon emissions than the burning of fossil fuels in 7 out of the 10 worst polluting countries. The unprecedented wildfires ranked as the fourth largest carbon emitter in 2023 behind China, the U.S. and India. Environmentalists and indigenous communities in California and Oregon are celebrating after work crews this week breached the last of 4 dams along the Klamath River, completing the largest dam removal project in U.S. history. For decades, conservationists led by the Yurok, Karuk, and Hoopa tribes fought to remove the dams, citing their heavy toll on salmon spawning grounds. Yurok tribe vice chair Frankie Myers said in a statement, quote, "The dams that have divided the basin are now gone and the river is free. Our sacred duty to our children, our ancestors, and for ourselves is to take care of the river. And today's events represent a fulfillment of that obligation," he said. Timor-Leste, or East Timor, is marking the 25th anniversary of its vote to become independent from Indonesia. East Timor had been under Indonesian occupation since 1975. Indonesia killed more than a third of the population, over 200,000 Timorese. After the 1999 independence vote, the Indonesian military and pro-Jakarta militias began attacking civilians, killing an estimated additional 1,500 people and burning parts of East Timor to the ground. Timor-Leste Prime Minister Xanana Gusmao, who'd been imprisoned for years by Indonesia, and President José Ramos Horta, leaders of East Timor's independence movement, are addressing the nation today. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is in Timor-Leste for the occasion. Guterres was the prime minister of Portugal at the time of the 1999 vote and a vocal supporter of East Timorese independence. East Timor was occupied by Portugal before Indonesia invaded. Earlier this week, Guterres spoke from the capital, Dili, where he addressed the climate crisis.
Throughout the Pacific, climate chaos is affecting those who did the least to cause it. And this is the time to act against climate change and to reinforce measures to protect the Timorese people in the face of the intensifications of climate disasters. But Timor-Leste cannot be alone in this effort. The international community has an obligation to support them, namely through an ambitious result at COP29 this year in terms of financial support.
Back in the United States, dozens of detainees at two immigrant prisons in California relaunched a hunger and labor strike this month to protest their inhumane treatment at the Mesa Verde and Golden State Annex facilities. Both of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement prisons are run by the for-profit prison company GEO Group. Among other things, detainees report medical neglect, lack of drinking water, poor food quality that's made them sick, sexual harassment and abuse, working for just $1 a day, and retaliation for speaking out. Protesters rallied in solidarity with the striking detainees in San Francisco Wednesday and delivered copies of recent civil rights complaints to Senator Alex Padilla. Police in Ann Arbor arrested four protesters at the University of Michigan Wednesday as they attempted to hold a peaceful die-in protest against Israel's assault on Gaza. The activists said, quote, "We will not celebrate back to school as UM invests in and funds genocide," they said. Here in New York, the campus group Columbia Students for Justice in Palestine reports their Instagram account has been permanently banned with no reason provided. The NYU Palestine Solidarity Committee similarly had its Instagram account frozen with no opportunity to appeal. Meanwhile, as students returned to the classroom at New York University, the administration's issued a new code of conduct stating use of the word Zionist could violate non-discrimination and anti-harassment policies. In a statement, NYU Faculty for Justice in Palestine says the policy, quote, troublingly equates criticism of Zionism with discrimination against Jewish people, unquote. The president of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, Jimmy Williams Jr., says his union is directing its massive international pension fund to divest from the Gaza genocide. Williams spoke Thursday at the IUPAT's General Convention.
There isn't another union in the building trades that hasn't called for a ceasefire like this union has, number one. Number two, we have called on the federal government to stop funding the genocide.
In more labor news, thousands of United Airlines flight attendants have voted to authorize a strike amid stalled contract talks with the airline. Members of the Association of Flight Attendants United Airlines haven't had a pay raise since 2019. They're seeking double-digit salary increases, more flexible scheduling, better pensions, and job security. Meanwhile, voice actors and motion capture performers who work on video games are entering their second month on strike. SAG-AFTRA is demanding a guarantee of consent and fair compensation for actors who allow their images and voices to be used to generate artificial intelligence creations. And here in New York, a Long Island man is the first person to be charged with wearing a face mask in public. Police say the 18-year-old was wearing a ski mask when he was arrested Sunday and charged with possessing a knife with the intent to engage in robbery. A new law passed by Nassau County's Republican-controlled legislature makes it a misdemeanor crime to wear a face mask covering in public, with narrow exceptions for health or religious reasons. Last week, the group Disability Rights New York filed a lawsuit against the mask ban, saying it discriminates against immunocompromised people. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, Vice President Kamala Harris sits down for her first major television interview since becoming the Democratic presidential nominee. We'll host a roundtable. Stay with us. By the Go-Go's. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Vice President Kamala Harris Thursday sat down for her first major television interview since President Biden dropped out of the race 5 weeks ago, and she rose to the top of the ticket. With her running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, sitting by her side, Harris was interviewed, as he was, by CNN's Dana Bash in a restaurant in Georgia, as Kamala Harris campaigned with Walz through the swing state. The 27-minute interview marked Harris's most extended, unscripted appearance as the Democratic presidential nominee. She was asked about some of her changes in policy positions on issues including decriminalizing border crossings and banning fracking. She also faced questions on the economy, U.S. weapons shipments to Israel and its war on Gaza, and more. For the most part, the vice president showed little substantive difference in policy from President Biden. The New York Times summed up the interview, saying Harris handled it, quote, without causing herself political harm or providing herself a significant boost, unquote. Today, we'll look at Kamala Harris's policy positions with a roundtable of guests on immigration, Israel-Palestine, the economy, and climate change. We'll begin on immigration and the border. This is CNN's Dana Bash questioning Vice President Harris last night.
Another issue, big one, is immigration. Mm-hmm. As Vice President, you were tasked with addressing the root causes of migration in southern countries and
northern part of Central America.
The northern part of Central America that deals with, that affects the southern border of the U.S. Mm-hmm. During the Biden-Harris administration, there were record numbers of illegal border crossings. Why did the Biden-Harris administration wait 3.5 years to implement sweeping asylum restrictions?
Well, first of all, the root causes work that I did as vice president, that I was asked to do by the president, has actually resulted in a number of benefits, including historic investments by American businesses in that region. The number of immigrants coming from that region has actually reduced since we began that work. But I will say this, that Joe Biden and I and our administration worked with members of the United States Congress on an immigration issue that is very significant to the American people and to our security, which is the border. Mm-hmm. And through bipartisan work, including some of the most conservative members of the United States Congress, a bill was crafted, which we supported, which I support. And Donald Trump got word of this bill that would have contributed to securing our border, and because he believes that it would not have helped him politically, he told his folks in Congress don't put it forward. He killed the bill. A border security bill that would have put 1,500 more agents on the border. And let me tell you something. The Border Patrol endorsed the bill. And I'm sure in large part because they knew they were working around the clock and 1,500 more agents would help them. That bill would have allowed us to increase seizures of fentanyl. Ask any community in America that has been devastated by fentanyl, what passing that bill would have done to address their concern and a pain that they've experienced.
So you would push that legislation again. I just want to ask
about... Not only push it, I will make sure that it comes to my desk and I would sign it.
Just one other question about something that you said in 2019 when you first ran. There was a debate. You raised your hand when asked whether or not the border should be decriminalized. Do you still believe that?
I believe there should be consequence. We have laws that have to be followed and enforced that address and deal with people who cross our border illegally, and there should be consequence. And let's be clear, in this race, I'm the only person who has prosecuted transnational criminal organizations who traffic in guns, drugs, and human beings. I'm the only person in this race who actually served a border state as Attorney General to enforce our laws, and I would enforce our laws as president going forward. I recognize the problem.
An excerpt of Vice President Kamala Harris being questioned by CNN's Dana Bash last night in a restaurant in Savannah, Georgia, where she and Governor Walz were campaigning. It was her first major television interview since becoming the Democratic presidential nominee. For more, we begin our roundtable discussion with Erica Andiola, longtime immigration activist, communications director for the Young Center, joining us from Phoenix, Arizona. Erica, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you respond to what the vice president did and didn't say?
Yeah, you know, it's just disheartening and really disappointing to see that immigration has become, at least for the Harris administration, or for the Harris campaign, for Kamala Harris herself, has become about security, about criminality, when in reality, immigration is so much more than that. And Democrats used to talk about it. They used to talk about how they were going to, you know, back in the Obama administration, that they were going to pass an immigration bill that would provide a path to citizenship for people, that would fix the immigration system so that there were paths for people to be able to migrate without having to go to the border and make this dangerous journey. And now it has become about criminality, about drugs. And in this interview, she really accepted that and went along with this Republican talking points that now truly have become Democrat talking points. And it's just not this, just disappointing to me, but it's also dangerous. Because it really causes for people to continue to think about immigrants as, you know, as a danger to this country. And we have seen what that has caused, not just on policy, but also in how people are now treating our communities.
So talk about, well, if you were running for president, what are the humanizing ways you would talk about immigration and new laws that are needed, what exactly comprehensive immigration reform would look like, and also talk about this bill that the Democrats repeatedly attacked Trump on, the one that was really crafted by a conservative, Democratic, and Republican group in the Senate. It was supported by the Republicans, as you said. And ultimately, Trump said, do not pass this because it'll give, at the time, Biden a win that he didn't want. Of course, now Harris is the presidential candidate.
Yeah. I'm going to start with a bill that she and many other Democrats have continuously talked about. It was talked about in the Democratic convention as well. Over and over again, this is the border security bill, which, honestly, it really is an anti-immigrant bill. That was put together, yes, by both Democrats and Republicans, but what it focuses on is really dismantling asylum. Instead of figuring out how can we figure out ways in which people can migrate to the U.S. In ways that are safe, right, that are welcoming and that don't put people in danger. Instead of that, it's really making sure that asylum is denied, right, more and more for people. And not only that, it's expanding detention. I mean, we have seen what detention looks like, right? How immigrants have been incarcerated and really imprisoned for so long. It will also start against family detention centers, right? We have fought against family detention centers for so long because children do not belong in prisons. Children do not belong in these places, yet this bill would do that. And they're not really talking about what that bill would do to cause more harm to the immigrant community. What I will talk about is what the Democrats have promised for years, right, which is providing also a path to citizenship for millions of undocumented people who are now really, like myself, well, I'm not undocumented anymore, but my family is. And what we have provided to this country for so many years is something that is valuable to this nation, that immigrants have provided for many decades. And I wish that the senator, or, and I'm sorry, the vice president, would speak about this issue as she was doing it as a senator from California, because she knows about the issue. But again, they are accepting this talking points that Republicans have used, and now she decides to use it for herself, which is, again, disappointing. And I hope that they change that tune, because it is dangerous for the community, for our community in this country.
I wanted to ask you about what happened this week. Biden immigration program keeping American families together was blocked by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and Project 2025 allies, including key family separation figure Stephen Miller, a key figure who continues to be at Trump's side.
Yes, it is. Unfortunately, something that we were celebrating just last week, and we were also hoping that the Harris campaign was really talking about this. That's something that the Biden administration did that was actually good for this country, but also that was popular with voters, right? Providing a path to citizenship, really, to the spouses of citizens, so people who are American citizens. And unfortunately, what happened this week is that because of this lawsuit that came from Texas, people can still apply. Unfortunately, they will not be able to be processed. And so we are going to have to see how this thing plays out in the courts. Just like DACA, right? A lot of people are waiting to see what happens so that they can have some hope on what's going to happen with their status. But you know, this is the kind of thing that we need to do permanently in Congress to ensure that courts are not continuing to come and dismantling these programs that are actually going to be helping family members of American citizens in this country. And, you know, we're going to continue to monitor this. But for now, we're making sure that people know that they can still apply, but unfortunately, their applications are not going to be processed until things change in court.
And you also have this Ken Paxton, who himself is serving community service to avoid securities fraud criminal trial, and also went through separately an impeachment trial in the Republican-controlled Democratic State Senate in Texas, actually raiding the homes of LULAC members, the oldest Latino civil rights organization in this country, in Texas?
They are doing everything that they have promised to do for so many years. I'm from Arizona. I live in Arizona. I have seen this. I have seen this anti-immigrant playbook. Texas is following suit. Texas has been doing everything in their power to try to scare immigrants out of the state and eventually out of the country. And there is a vibrant movement there that is pushing back, but we need the federal government to change. We need the Democrats to step in and really change the narrative, right? Change the narrative and also change policies to make sure that in the future we don't continue to have actors like people in Texas, like Paxton, like Abbott, all these folks who are going to continue to try to hurt our people, to scare our people away. And at the end of the day, it's human suffering that I'm worried about.
Erica Andiola is a longtime immigration activist. We're also joined by sociologist Nikhil Goyal, The Lever's David Sirota, and Yusuf Munayir, head of the Palestine-Israel program at the Arab Center, Washington, D.C. I want to go back to Vice President Kamala Harris speaking in her first major TV interview since President Biden dropped out of the race 5 weeks ago. This is Dana Bash of CNN asking Harris about her policy on Gaza.
President Biden has tried unsuccessfully to end the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. He's been doing it for months and months, along with you. Would you do anything differently? For example, would you withhold some U.S. weapons shipments to Israel? That's what a lot of people on the progressive left want you to do.
Let me be very clear. I am unequivocal and unwavering in my commitment to Israel's defense and its ability to defend itself. And that's not going to change. But let's take a step back. October 7,